Welcome. This is episode 534 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. In today's podcast, I'm going to be addressing a topic I title Addressing Eros Application Red Flags. Addressing Eros Application Red Flags. A red flag is basically something on your application that you're worried about that will potentially make it harder for you to match into residency. So my goal in this podcast is to address some general principles. And then after that, I'll go into some specific common situations I've accumulated over the years from my experience working with lots of people that are applying for residencies in the US. I believe I will cover a pretty wide swath of situations. So chances are you would find this podcast to be helpful for your situation. So let's jump right into it and discuss some general principles. So what are some general principles to keep in mind with addressing red flags on your application? Number one is don't lie. Don't lie. Don't try to fudge the numbers when you're discussing your red flag. Again, some people that are very experienced in the process can see right through a person trying to be deceitful. So don't lie. Second thing I will say to keep in mind as a general principle is to be concise in your descriptions. You see people, they write a whole essay relating to their red flag, and then their personal statement essentially becomes like a three-page tome. That's not the kind of thing you're trying to achieve with these things. The third general principle to keep in mind is that this should be made in a separate paragraph. Most times, if something is a significant enough red flag, you should address it in your personal statement. You should give it a separate paragraph. But again, let it not be like a half-page paragraph. No, let it be something that is concisely written. So make it a separate paragraph in your personal statement. Now, general principle number four is, again, let it be well edited. Let it be well edited. Let it be well edited. So obviously, a red flag is something that is tenuous. So it's not something you just want to describe in a very flippant manner. No, it's something you want to make sure that is well edited and is constructively written. General principle number five is don't hide. So you see some people, they have ginormous red flags and then they just choose to not mention it at all. Like it's something that's very significant that you know that it will very likely come out either during your application or it's something a program director can look up and figure out pretty quickly. Or is something that ECFMG will relate to the program or whatever. You don't want to hide those kinds of things because when it comes out, it can end up causing you bigger harm in the future. Now, the next general principle is when you're addressing red flags, don't show a pattern. So like, for example, if a person fails one USMLE exam, it's not wise to then in your personal statement use terminology like, oh, I have always struggled with XYZ exam, or I have always struggled with standardized tests. By using such pattern-based statements, you're showing them a pattern that, oh, wait, oh, this failure you have is a symptom of you just being bad at standardized testing. When you paint those kinds of patterns, then people look at it as your story. And if they look at it as your permanent story, then they would probably extrapolate to you having those same kinds of issues in a residency. Because in residency, you're still going to take standardized exams, like your in-training exams. Post-residency, you're going to take standardized exams, like your board and your licensure exams. As a program director, you would not want to get a kind of person like that into your residency program. And then another general principle, I decided to stop numbering them because it's hard for me to keep track of the numbers and still focus as I teach this podcast. But another thing to also mention is avoid excuses. Whenever you're addressing a red flag, avoid excuses. Obviously, this does not, like, this partially applies, so not fully applies, to truly bad situations. So say, for example, you lost a loved one while you were studying for a USMLE exam, and because of that, you know, you failed or you didn't do as well as you wanted to do. That's obviously something that's a decent excuse. But the thing is, even with mentioning that, you still have to take some degree of responsibility. So balance it out that way. But you see some people, they just give excuses for everything. Even if those excuses are tenable, it may not be acceptable to a residency review committee. Next general principle to keep in mind is clean your social media or delete your social media. Clean it up. Because again, an increasing part of the screening process these days is to look at people's social media. What Reddit comments have you made in the past? What Facebook posts have you made? What have you put on Instagram? What have you put on X? All these things, some people check those things. And if they find anything that is lewd, they find anything that may be construed as offensive, they find anything that may be construed as controversial, that may very rapidly torpedo your application. So just keep that in mind. And then another thing, another general principle for red flags is whenever you're addressing an experience, make sure it's a substantive experience. It kind of comes across as a red flag where people are just basically box checkers with their applications. They put a bunch of experiences where it was like 2 hours on a Saturday, something they almost didn't invest anything in, just as a means of padding one's application. It's better to have fewer experiences that are substantive than to put a bunch of non-substantive experiences that just dilute out the quality of your application. Okay, so now that we have talked about these general principles, let's then start going to specific situations. Okay, so the first situation I'm going to start off with is a very common one. I've dealt with this for years with many people. So common situation is, I failed a USMLE exam, or I got a very low score, or I've had multiple failures. So the thing is, whenever you have something like this, you have to address it in your personal statement. So how do you address it? Again, like I said, you're going to give it a paragraph. And the first thing you're going to do is you're going to state the problem. Hey, I failed a USMLE exam, or I passed this exam with a crazy low score, like 1 point above passing or something like that. Honestly, if you're 10 points above passing or thereabouts, I don't really see why you should start explaining it as a red flag. But, you know, although that may be called into question if you're applying to a discipline that is very competitive, then in that case, maybe you want to offer an explanation. But most times I'll say that this should be reserved for people that fail an exam or have multiple failures. So whenever you have this thing, the first thing you do, you're going to state the problem, right? Hey, I failed this exam. And then you're going to try to give your reason for failing it. But again, there's a difference between giving a reason and giving an excuse. Some people, they literally just blame the problem on everybody else. They never take any kind of responsibility. That is not the kind of person you want to be. That does not come across well. So it's very helpful. Take responsibility that, hey, I didn't have the right study habits. So that's like a reason. I didn't have the right study habits. So notice that's not an excuse. That's a reason. But again, it's a taking responsibility kind of reason. It's a taking responsibility kind of reason. You know, I had poor study habits, blah, 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 blah. But after you then take responsibility, you then need to talk about the corrective action you took. What corrective action did you take? Oh, I changed my study approach, or I consulted with a mentor to give me guidance. And then after you talk about your corrective action, talk about the results of that corrective action. Talk about your comeback story. So, after changing my study habits, I retook the exam and I passed and I got 30 points above passing or whatever, or my scores improved by 40 points. You want that comeback story. That's very helpful. Now, I'm not going to try to mince words here, but if you're a person that has failed USMLEs multiple times, to be honest with you, you either have to consider applying to a not as competitive specialty or consider something different as a line of work. You see some people, I feel like sometimes, and again, I want to be truthful here and be as blunt as possible while being respectful and cognizant of the struggles that people are going through. But if you failed a USMLE, again, I cannot give a specific number, but let me give something egregious. Let's say you failed USMLE exams like 4 times. To be honest with you, the only thing that would get you into a residency program is if you have some very strong connections. If not, it is highly unlikely that you'd be able to match into a residency program. I'm just being honest with you, because in that situation, it may just make sense for you to consider another healthcare career that you may still feel pretty fulfilled in, still earn pretty good pay from. So just something to keep in mind. You know, like being a physician's assistant or a nurse practitioner or a respiratory therapist. or an anesthesia assistant. There are many things you can do. Because many people, you see them, people online, you know, because everyone online wants to be, I don't know, I just feel like it's not kindness. It may seem like tough love with what I'm saying, but sometimes you got to be, it's not sometimes, you got to be honest with people so they don't keep wasting their money applying when their probabilities of getting anything done or getting any successful outcome is almost zero, right? So it's something to keep in mind. Now, what is the next situation I'm going to talk about? The next red flag I'm going to talk about is being an older graduate. Being an older graduate. Oh, I graduated from med school 10 years ago or something crazy. Well, here's the thing. If you're an older graduate, you should take step three. That is one of the best ways to address your red flags. Take step three. And also, you need to be able to discuss what you've been doing since you graduated. So, for example, if since you've graduated, because let me address this from this perspective. I've noticed this problem with IMGs a lot. International, so the word IMG means international medical graduate, because I worked with tons of IMGs. IMGs, for whatever reason, they will have clinical experience in their home country. But for whatever bizarre reason, they're just very shy to talk about it in an application. No, that is precisely the wrong thing to do. So if you're an international medical graduate, and let's say you graduated like 10 years ago, but man, in that 10-year period, you were a resident in your country, you worked as an attending at a clinic or a hospital, you worked with ICU patients and all those things, you should absolutely mention that. That very quickly, in a sense, brings down the hit. It doesn't completely take care of it, but it significantly helps you deal with the hit of having graduated from med school a long time ago. In that, by explaining your experiences, what you've been doing since then, especially when it's clinically related, you're showing people that, oh, wait, yes, I know it was a long time since I graduated from med school, but see, I have all these skills. In fact, make them see that, oh, wait, you're almost like a resident, or you're almost better than a resident. Now, wait, I'm applying into internal medicine, but I graduated from med school 10 years ago. I did residency for 3 years in my home country, where I had to work with patients that had malaria, typhoid fever, myocardial infarctions, and all those things. Oh, and since then, I've been working in this government hospital where I work 24-hour call every 3 days or whatever. By using those specific terms, again, make sure you're telling the truth. By discussing your specifics, you're making them see that, wait, the only thing is, yes, this person graduated a long time ago, but the 10-year period between when this person graduated and the present time, this person has not just been burning it, sitting at home, playing video games, hanging out on social media, doing nothing. You're literally showing them that, oh, this person actually has pretty strong clinical experience. So maybe they may struggle a bit with getting in tune with the U.S. healthcare system. But that medical knowledge, that working with patients, that clinical experience, they have. Okay. Now, what is the next red flag that I'm going to address? I feel so horrible saying that this is a red flag. But again, it's just the reality of the world we live in. What's this next red flag? Is having a mental health issue. Please, again, don't pillage on me for saying this. Literally, look at what I said. I feel sad saying that this is a red flag. But again, believe it or not, I'm just trying to be realistic and trying to be truthful. Now, here's the thing. If you have a mental health issue or a health issue that does not affect your performance, where you can take care of patients very well and no problems, then I don't necessarily see the need for you to disclose. Again, please, your mileage may vary with this advice I'm giving. I'm just trying to give honest advice here. So you don't have to disclose. You don't. It's sad, but it's true. Because again, believe it or not, there's stigma out there for people that have mental health problems or people that have certain health issues. But if it's something that you know that, wait, this thing truly is affecting my performance, is something that's going to impact my ability to care for patients, it is probably something you should mention. It's probably something you should be truthful about. It's probably something you should mention. Okay. Again, I'm just basically here saying, share information that is necessary. Share information that is absolutely necessary. If you have a mental health disorder that is well managed, you've been stable for years, you've had no issues with help caring for patients and everything, I just don't see the great need for you to mention it. Maybe, again, if you feel like you want to mention it, that's fine. But but I don't necessarily see the great need for that. I'm trying to be careful here with what I say. Okay, now what's the next thing I want to discuss? The next thing I want to discuss is kind of similar to what I've discussed already, but again, it's a gap in your education. That's another red flag. That's pretty common, gap in your education. Like, oh, you were in med school. Instead of graduating in 4 years, it took you 5 years or 6 years or 7 years. Now, those, if it's a small gap, like 2 months or 3 months, it's not a big deal. Let it go. But if it's a substantive gap, wow, like a year, 2 years, 3 years, you need to describe what you were doing during that period. And again, make sure you're describing the productive thing you did during that period. I would hope that that year off you took it off for research, or let's say maybe you had a medical issue that needed attention during that period. So let's say, oh, you had a unfortunate, you know, some people, some medical students get cancer. You have cancer, or you had cancer, hopefully you're in remission now, and you had to undergo chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and whatnot. All those things take time, right? So you need to describe what you did during that period. Well, I took a year off to do a Fulbright, or I took a year off to get my MBA, or whatever. You need to explain what you did during that period. A gap of a year or whatever, you need to explain, right? Because you don't want people getting the impression that, oh, wow, there's this gap. You didn't explain anything about it. What did you do during that period? You want to make them know what you literally did during that period. That has to be explained in your application. This is one of those things you may not necessarily need to explain in a personal statement. But if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure ERAS has a section where you can elaborate on these ideas. Okay, now what is the next red flag? The next red flag, this probably applies pretty much to international medical graduates, having no US clinical experiences, no USCEs, no US clinical experiences. So again, I've kind of answered this already. These things are kind of similar, but this may be obviated if you have strong international experience. So let's say you've pretty much been doing a lot of healthcare in your home country. That may actually deal with that issue for you. Another thing I'm going to say is, again, go into detail your level of care, right? Don't just say, I worked in a hospital. Hey, did you work with ICU patients? Did you work with patients that had to be on a ventilator? These are things that will be valuable for like an internal medicine program director to know, because they'll be like, oh, wow, this person pretty much was an ICU worker while they're in their home country. That gives more credibility to your application. Although not having US clinical experiences, to be honest with you, it probably will not fly for the competitive specialties. Just something to keep in mind. For competitive specialties, you probably need to go ahead and get some US clinical experiences. And then what is the next red flag? The next red flag is you've applied on ERAS before. You've applied multiple times. You've literally applied multiple times. So whenever you, if you've had prior applications, you know, the way you address this red flag is this. Number one, discuss the mistakes of the past that you have made. What mistakes did you make? Like, what do you feel? Because it demonstrates insight. You want to show them that, okay, my previous application was unsuccessful. You know, I reached out to program directors that I interviewed with and whatnot to ask for some feedback. I reached out to mentors to ask for some feedback. They told me, you know, that my application could use some work in this area and that area, in this area and that area. So you want to first highlight, okay, this is why I didn't match last year. And then you need to discuss, when you're addressing the red flag, these are the tangible steps I took to fix that problem. So I'll just tell you this right now. If between applications, between years, you didn't do anything to beef up your application, you didn't do anything to address some of the concerns on your application, you probably will not match. And you want to be realistic, because some people, the reason they didn't match, it's not like they need to change many things about the application. They just maybe need to change what they're applying into. So be realistic. You have like very poor scores. You have almost no research. And you're still trying to apply into orthopedic surgery. That doesn't make much of any sense. But let's say, for example, oh, okay, you applied to ortho last year. But man, you had only like one publication. Okay, let's say, you know, you spoke to program directors, they said that, man, you're kind of lacking in the research angle, you're kind of lacking here, you're kind of lacking here. And let's say you've graduated from med school, and then you're like, oh, okay, I took step three, studied Harvard, I got a 250. And hey, I have these four new publications, I have one in JAMA. It's not, I'm just giving examples, right? You don't have to publish in JAMA to get into residency, but I'm just kind of giving an example. Right. So in those circumstances, when you do that, you're essentially showing them that, okay, you did tangible things to fix whatever. But if your scores are really low, you applied ortho last year, you were not successful. You have like horrible scores, no research. You know that your application is not competitive for that discipline. It's probably realistic for you to apply to something completely different. Right. It's just a smart way to go about life instead of you going, because the more times you go through the ERAS application process, the lower and lower and lower your probabilities of matching successfully. And another thing I'm going to say is if you're reapplying, make sure that you get like new letters or at least update the letter. You see some people, I've seen this, I believe I've seen this egregious thing before. You see people, they're applying again for another year and they're using a letter that they used last year. Same date, same everything, no updates. Those letters have lost a lot of their power. So try to update things. Literally, try to update things. Try to update things. Try to update things. So if you use the exact same stuff, it's a very bad look, if I'm being completely honest with you. Now, what is the next red flag I'm going to address? The next red flag I'm going to address is having failed coursework. Failed coursework. Failed coursework. Honestly, if it's like something super minor, let it go. Oh, I failed this 1 week class on some like nameless subject that no one really cares about. Big deal. Let it go. Let it go. Let it go. Even if they see it, they'll probably ask you during your interview, mention it, move along. But if it's something very major, like, oh, wow, I had to repeat a rotation, I had multiple course failures, then you absolutely need to explain. And again, basically follow the mantra I used for, oh, you failed a USMLE exam. Describe the situation, take responsibility, state, you know, the causes, the reasons. Again, remember, a reason is not necessarily an excuse. State your reasons. What did you do to fix it? And then state your comeback story. Hey, I realized that, well, this is why I failed this rotation. This is the reason. I consulted with a mentor. I got some guidance from a coach. I changed this thing. And oh my goodness, I took this rotation again and it was a much better experience than the first time. I did much better, got much better evaluations. Oh, my shelf exam scores improved dramatically. And these principles, I've been using them in future rotations. And boom, I have been very successful in that regard. That's a great thing to do, right? That's a nice comeback story. Now, what is the next thing I want to address? The next red flag. The next red flag, this one is a little rarer, but it certainly does come up every now and then. Again, I've done this for many, many years, right? But it kind of comes up every now and then. And the big thing here is disciplinary actions or issues with the law. Disciplinary actions or issues with the law. So if you've had disciplinary actions against you or, you know, issues with the law, here's what you need to do. You need to come clean. 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 But don't over grotesque. This is not a real term. Something I kind of just made up. But I think it expresses the idea I'm trying to get across here very nicely. Come clean, but don't over grotesque. So you see some people, they paint every single gory detail of what they did. No, come on. That's not wise. I'm not saying you should entertain falsehood. But again, give the information that is necessary to explain what happened and leave it at that. But you see some people, they start opening up this web and this kind of worms that may not necessarily need to be opened up. You can state what you did, be completely truthful and not over-fatalize yourself. Make yourself look like, oh, this person has no hope. This person is a person I should be legit scared about. No, don't present yourself in that light. Don't present yourself in that light. So again, what are you supposed to do here? Explain the situation. Take responsibility. This should be in a separate paragraph. Talk about what you've done since that time. Talk about the lessons from the experience. Discuss how you're applying those lessons in your current life. Discuss how, as you're applying those lessons in your current life, it's paying off. In fact, a very high-level thing to do here is relate these lessons I've learned to you being a resident, to be you being a physician. Like, oh, wow, I got in this trouble with the law. You know, and I've learned the value of patience. And, you know, I feel like I've been practicing patience. I've been very intentional about practicing patience. And it's something that's really going to help me as a resident to spend time with patients, make sure that I get all the information from them, be very humanistic with them. And, you know, being patient to also think through things so I don't miss out on things. So I'm a person that is very good from a patient safety perspective. Again, I'm just coming off with off-the-cuff examples, right? But you're showing them that, wow, the lessons I picked up, it just demonstrates insight. When people demonstrate insight, it makes them get looked upon very favorably by a genuine person that is reading through that application, right? So show that you've grown, show that you've moved past that issue. All right. Now, what is the next red flag? We're going to wrap this up pretty quickly. So what is the next red flag? No research. The next red flag is, gee, you have no research. Although, to be honest with you, this is something that is very preventable. It's very preventable. Try to not be in this situation if you can. Even if it's a bunch of case reports you have, that's better than having that section of your application being completely fallow, right? So you have no research. So here's the thing. If you have no research, the way you can sort of kind of deal with this problem is, one, generate a ton of case reports if you can. Case reports are things you can bang out pretty quickly. Two, try to really emphasize your other tangible sides. You know, let's say, for example, there is a big initiative that you have championed. Talk about it. Talk about it. That's a smart thing to do. Like, for example, say you didn't have research, but man, you were like a big time tutor at your medical school and you held review sessions at your medical school or whatever. Talk about it. That may not be research, but it shows you that you're a value add person to a program, or that this is a person that may, you know, teach other residents as they go higher down the line. They'll be a kind of person that will love to do morning report. They would like to teach medical students that may rotate with this program, XYZ, right? So emphasize your other tangible sides, you know, initiatives you've championed and things like that. All right. Now, what's the next red flag? Horrible letters. Honestly, again, this is something that's pretty preventable. Just get better letters. That's why sometimes it may be helpful to request more letters than you may need. It's sometimes helpful to request more letters than you may need. Because again, some people just, again, like 30, 40 people asking them for letters. So it just kind of dilutes the quality of how many letters they can write. So that's why sometimes you see some people, they say, oh, I'm sorry, I can't write letters for you. I've already promised 5 people, because they want to write quality letters for those 5 people. That's why it's usually pretty helpful to request letters sooner rather than later in your process. And then, last thing I think I'm going to talk about here, the personal statement. What are some red flags that come across in a personal statement? These are things you kind of want to avoid, because some red flags, you may not have them right now, but if you take certain bad actions, you may have them down the line. So what are some red flags you really, really want to avoid in your personal statement? Number one is pride. Some people did this in their personal statements. They're pretty much describing themselves as heroes. You don't want to be that kind of person. Number two is arrogance. Again, it's kind of similar to pride. Number three is painting yourself in an overtly negative light. You see some people, and again, many of these things I'm saying, you may be like, wow, Divine, are you just coming up with these things? No, these are things I've literally seen play out in real life. Again, for years, I've reviewed people's applications. I have done mock interviews with people. I have reviewed people's personal statements. I've done these things over the years. You see some people, you read their personal statement from beginning to end, and it's just negativity after negativity after negativity after negativity. Don't do that. Another ginormous red flag on a personal statement is trashing others or trashing other specialties. That is not a smart thing to do at all. And then another red flag you may see on a personal statement is no clear, sound reasoning as to why they chose that specialty. They're just waxing that, oh, I want to go into this specialty. And they may be saying things, but they're like, man, these are reasons that demonstrate zero insight about this discipline. That is not the kind of personal statement you want. And then another big red flag with a personal statement is, you see these people, they give all these philosophical statements. They're talking about all these, Abraham Lincoln said this. And then that Abraham Lincoln thing, they don't describe any relationship to their lives, any relationship to the applications. They give zero examples of how that statement even relates. That's not a very smart thing to do with a personal statement. And also another red flag with personal statements, you see some people, their personal statements are like overcomplicated. They're kind of writing their personal statements like English PhDs. And it's just really hard to follow. Or you're like, man, these words are like big, intense words. Gee, I don't know how to handle these kinds of things. That's not a personal statement you want to write. Because again, the person reading your personal statement, they're probably having to read tons of other personal statements. You want it to be something that is memorable but easy to follow. And then another thing that kind of comes across weird in a personal statement is having bad spelling and grammar. You got to get your personal statement edited. It's just common sense. And then another bad thing that comes across in a personal statement, at least, and again, it may be different for people. Some people may find no issue with this, but I certainly find the issues with this, and it just kind of looks bizarre when I see it. And I imagine other people probably have similar thoughts, is having multiple short paragraphs. You see people, their personal statement have like 10 paragraphs in it, 10 like 3 or 4 sentence paragraphs. That is very unwise. It's a personal statement. You should try to have like 3 or 4 decent sized paragraphs and leave it at that. But having multiple short paragraphs, that's not very smart. Another thing, you obviously know this, is something that's very generic, something that sounds very templated. Again, you want your personal statement to be heartfelt, to be thoughtful, to look like something that is unique to you, that is specific to you, and not something that, oh, this is like every author personal statement that I've just read. And then the final thing I want to say is that try to keep your personal statements to no more than a page and a half at best. No more than a page and a half at best, 12-point font. 12-point font, Times New Roman, you know, maybe like 1.5 spacing between the lines. That's usually like a pretty good length to have. So I'm going to go ahead and stop here. If you're interested in any of my review classes, I have review classes for step 1 all the way to step 3. I have a bunch of step 2, step 3 classes in May, and so a bunch of step 1 review related classes in May as well. And then I have this big 50-hour step 2 class. It's offered once a year. Very high yield class, very helpful. I made separate podcasts on those, or you can shoot me an email. I can give you some more information. They're all over Zoom. And then I also do one-on-one tutoring, and I help with ERAS applications as well. So if you're interested, just shoot me an email through the website, and I can give you some more information. And I have these podcasts on Apple, Google, and Spotify. I have a YouTube channel that you can check out. And I have another website called DivineInterventionLifeLessons.com. Most weeks, I try to post 2 podcasts around 10 minutes long, where with a biblical perspective, I try to address a life lesson. So there's actually an Apple podcast associated with that, the Divine Intervention Life Lessons podcast. So just check those out. So thank you for listening to me today. I will see you in episode 535, I believe. Have a wonderful weekend. God bless you, and bye for now. Thank you.